Baltimore poet David Franks is part exorcist, part clown, part con artist. Here's a piece recorded at the first annual April Fool's Day Poetry Marathon here in Washington last year. This is called Pay Attention.
Pay attention. I try to live for the moment, but sometimes I'd rather die. I wish I could say that. That's not true. That's not true. Often I dream that my wishes would come true, like that one just did. Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes all you have to do is open your mouth and be redundant. Pay attention. If I had ended this poem right there, it would have been a good idea. A real poem. If I had ended this poem right there, some people might have thought, oh, that's cute. And that's true, it would have been, but not cute enough to be... to be the king of the new Cutie Pie School of Poetry. Pay attention. It's not a particularly great idea to insert one's casual ambitions into a poem. Usually it's self-indulgent. People resent that sort of thing. If I had ended the poem when it was still a poem, some people might have thought, oh, that's clever, but too easy. I agree, that's true too, although sometimes I wonder a lot about why something's wrong when things are too easy. When this poem was still a poem, some people might not have thought at all, but those people who really understood it would have said, ah, he's saying that wishes and dreams are just words. That would have been true too. Pay attention. One sure way of spotting a person that doesn't know what they're doing is if they have to explain what they've been doing after they've done it, like I just did. Never do that. Pay attention. This too would have been an appropriate ending. Pretty remarkable, in fact, because it would have made the poem that was a poem again. It would have been a real tour de force, as a matter of fact, redeeming a purposely destroyed work by inventively reinforcing its major theme. Some people would have thought, oh, that's cute. Some people would have thought, oh, that's clever, but too easy. Some people wouldn't have thought at all. But the people who really understood the poem would have thought, ah, that's a real tour de force. Pay attention. A real poet would never do what I just did. It's redundant, self-congratulatory, ultimately boring. Obviously, and even more than before, I still don't know what I'm doing. Pay attention. Some of our greatest artists and poets have become some of our greatest artists and poets by not knowing what they were doing. Some of the great artists and poets who have created astounding works by not knowing what they were doing are Frank O'Hara, Ted Berrigan, Andy Warhol, Jack Spicer, Jean Cocteau, Ezra Pound, John Cage, Marcel Duchamp, Robert Creeley, Jackson Pollock, Robert Duncan, Rambo, the Dadaists, the Surrealists, John Keats, and God. Pay attention. Frank O'Hara indicated that it was when he didn't know what he was doing and felt lofty enough to have stopped thinking that refreshment arrived. Frank O'Hara said that you have to take your chances and try to avoid being logical. You just have to go on your nerve, he said. I remember Ted Berrigan saying that Ted Berrigan exhausts his poetics and then just goes on nerve, which is what Frank O'Hara said. But then Ted Berrigan also said that much of his most successful work was inspired by his misunderstanding of Frank O'Hara's work, so that when he thought at one time he knew what Frank O'Hara was doing, he later discovered that he didn't know what he was doing when he thought he knew what they were both doing. Someone who was also has also elevated misunderstanding to the level of an art is Andy Warhol, who is an idea man and rarely does his own work. Andy Warhol says that something he looks for in associates is a certain amount of misunderstanding of what he is trying to do. That way Andy Warhol will not end up doing what he is trying to do, but rather it will be a consequence of collaborative misunderstanding. Andy Warhol says that when you work with people who misunderstand you, instead of getting transmissions, you get transmutations. And that's much more interesting in the long run. So when Andy Warhol thinks he knows what he is doing, he gets somebody who doesn't know what he is doing to do it for him. Jack Spicer often said he was a radio. Andy said John Cocteau was a radio. Jack Spicer, though, said that he was a counterpunching radio, trying to defeat the ghostly messages he couldn't help but receive. Jack Spicer said he was a lousy boxer, a punch-drunk boxer, a defeated counterpunching radio. Jack Spicer was a medium. And this was after Ezra Pound said, near the end of the cantos, it will not cohere, indicating he thought for a long time that he knew what he was doing. But all that time, he was doing what he was doing, what he thought he was doing, was different from what he actually did. And there is no indication that he was ever particularly happy about not knowing what he was doing. Unlike John Cage, Pound wasn't blessed with a sunny disposition. Cage, paradoxically, often feels morally obliged to be not in control of what he is doing or what others are doing during the performance of the things that he does. In that way, much of what he has done is never really done, but always doing. Nothing is ever realized, every performance being another realization. Duchamp often said he felt the impulse to resist, reverse, work against what he intended to do. Unlike Warhol, he did not hire associates. Duchamp didn't need to, for in 1926, Duchamp said his hands became his enemies. He was famously unperturbed when his major work, The Large Glass, shattered in transit. He thought it only added to its perfection. Robert Creeley is another who has often spoken of the necessity to resist intention, that knowing what you are doing only inhibits discovery, i.e., Creeley often says, it is the doing, not the knowing. Talking about swimming and being in the water over your head do not provide the same experience. The act of writing is what Creeley values, not unlike Jackson Pollock, the painter, who said, when I am in my painting, I'm not aware of what I'm doing. It is only after a sort of get acquainted period that I see what I have been about. The poet Robert Duncan, who lives in a marvelously appointed house, often speaks of his great lust for chaos and values it because of its mystery. Once during a series of seminars with Duncan I attended, he began each session by taking definitions for unknown words selected by Jess Collins from a sealed envelope and wrote them down on the blackboard at the beginning of each seminar, and just went on from there, wherever the language led him. After I got used to his voice, I always found him fascinating. No discussion of great poets who did not know what they were doing, however diffuse and incomplete, would be complete without mentioning Rambo. It was very important to Rambo not to be in control of his senses, to disorient his acculturated responses, to hallucinate freely, to disrupt expectation, his own as well as others, and so he victimized his sensibility and the sensibility of others in his attempt to be godlike through the magic of poetry. Certainly it was equally important to the Dadaists and Surrealists not to be in control of what they were doing, to disrupt and violate their acculturated identities. John Keats never had this problem. For John Keats said, had no identity. When he woke up in the morning and he looked outside and saw a little sparrow, he just became the sparrow, so much so that he went outside and started pecking at the gravel, looking for food. That's in a letter to his brother. But the Dadaists and Surrealists had to try harder to achieve a more unbounded self-actualization and defeat their identities by fusing with or imitating the unconscious. Marcel Raymond said, only the unconscious, free from the biases ingrained in us by parents, social custom, and all the artificial restrictions on intellectual freedom, does not lie. It alone is worth bringing to light. All deliberate and conscious effort, composition, logic are futile. The celebrated French lucidity is nothing but a cheap lantern. André Breton said that outside all forms, idealism, outside the opiates of religion, the marvelous comes to light within reality and dreams, obsessions, preoccupations, and sleep, fear, love, chance. Generally, the Dadaists and Surrealists chose chance processes to aid them in not being in control of what they were doing. They are almost always credited with the invention of chance processes. But in my mind, the real father of chance processes was the Father, the Divine Father, or God. One great example of a divinely inspired chance process, my favorite example of a divinely inspired chance process, is found in the spiritual classic, The Little Flowers of St. Francis. Once St. Francis was traveling in Tuscany with Brother Masio, whom he most willingly used to take along as his companion, because of his pleasant conversation and unusual discretion, and because of the help which he gave him in his raptures by dealing with people and hiding him from them so that they should not disturb him. One day they were walking along a road together with Brother Masio going a bit ahead of St. Francis. But when they came to a crossroad where three roads met, they could go to Siena or Florence or Arezzo. Brother Masio said, "Father, which road should we take?" St. Francis replied, "We will take the road God wants us to take." Brother Masio said, "How will we be able to know God's will?" St. Francis answered, "By the sign I will show you." Now, under the merit of holy obedience, I command you to twirl around in this crossroad, right where you are standing, just as children do, and not to stop turning until I tell you. So, Brother Masio began to turn around, and he twirled around so long that he fell down several times from dizziness in his head, which usually results from such turning. But as St. Francis did not tell him to stop, and he wanted to obey faithfully, he got up again and resumed his gyrations. Finally, after he had been twirling around bravely for a long time, St. Francis said, "Stand still, don't move." And he stood still, and he didn't move. And St. Francis asked him, "What direction are you facing?" Brother Masio replied, "Towards Siena." And St. Francis said, "That is the road God wants us to take." Truly, it was important to God in his divine plan to not have his servants know what they were doing in his service. Pay attention. Again, a real poet would never do what I have just done. A real poem is an immaculate condensation of feeling and doesn't need to be explained. A real poem doesn't have to mean, it just has to be. Quite obviously, I am a fraud, a precise fraud, but nevertheless a fraud. But then I don't know what I am doing. You see, I try to live for the moment, but sometimes I'd rather die, which is why I'm going off to heaven now, and you won't see me anymore. And since I've never been there before, I truly don't know what I am doing when I say I'm doing good work, great work. And if you don't pay attention, you'll be sorry when I'm dead and gone. You'll see that just like Frank O'Hara, Ted Berrigan, Andy Warhol, Jack Spicer, John Cocteau, Ezra Pound, John Cage, Marcel Duchamp, Robert Creeley, Jackson Pollock, Robert Duncan, Rambo, the Dadaist, Surrealist, John Keats, and God, I was one of those who really didn't know what they were doing, so you better pay attention soon, or it'll be too late for me to explain exactly what I had in mind when I lost it.